So here we are in the newly renovated City Hall Council Chambers. What exactly, I mean, I can definitely tell the big impact when you walk in are the new screens.
That's right. City Council members insisted they be able to play video games during their meetings, so we had to comply. This Council Chambers, when the building was built in the mid-90s, has had the exact same AV equipment for all these years. So it was all analog. It was all falling apart, and I do mean that literally, it was falling apart. So rather than continue to keep repairing it, the administration and the council teamed up in last year for this year's budget, to put money in order to revamp. And so all of the internals in this room were gutted. All of the analog equipment is out. It's all digital now, so I can't promise that city government will be any clearer when you watch it, but it will appear clearer because you now are watching a digital version of government meetings held in this council chamber. It was a long time coming, and it was overdue. The expense of the project was what was holding us back, but now it's far more modern, will last a much longer time, and just people, when they tune in, will notice a difference. But if you come to the council chambers, and we hope that people do for city council meetings or any other government meetings, or just come in the building and take a look, you won't believe the difference.
So I have to really, though, start with the big announcement on the city contract with the Indianapolis developer, which would be, I guess, phase one, is that fair to say?
We don't have a contract yet.
We're working on it.
Right.
At this point. And right. Just for those who are listening, this is the portion of land that's between City Hall and Upland Brewery. That area in there, is that a fair assessment?
And from here to Bender Lumber, the 12 acres that, for those who are familiar with the area, will remember it as having been the food storages building, the IU printing, and many other auxiliary offices of the university on the 12 acres to the northwest of City Hall.
So I assume a lot was going on behind the scenes you were able to actually make the announcement a week or so ago.
Correct.
What all precipitated now that you can finally tell us about that project?
Sure. I don't mean this as a joke. First, I was elected, and immediately I was interested in that 12 acres. We knew that the university was going to be phasing out and was going to be moving the auxiliary services to the campus for economic reasons, for efficiency, and so we knew that plan was in place, and that was actually under President Herbert that discussion began. Then there was a transition to President McRobbie, and the university made a decision to stay in that 12 acres. It would move all of its auxiliaries to campus, but it would use that property as an investment property. And we were concerned that if the university did that, it would lead to more student apartments, chain restaurant retail, because that would produce the highest level of income. And it's not the only university in the country that had considered it. Many, given the lagging state support, were turning to that method. So we went through a couple of years of discussion about that. The economy went south. The university, I think, was not receiving the kind of support that all of us would prefer from the state legislature. And we were able to step up and offer to purchase that land, which would give the university immediate money. And that's what we did. So in 2011, the city acquired the land. And from that time forward, we've been working on getting to this point. Some are arguing we're moving too quickly. We're getting this done just before Cruzan leaves office. Others, I think more rightly, are saying it's taken a long time to get here. The reason it's taken a long time is it's an incredible opportunity. You want to get it right. So there was about a year and a half master planning process that created a vision for it. Then we had to start with the RFP, the request for proposals, and we put those out, and that took a good number of months to receive inquiries and then proposals from potential developers. Then we had to vet all those. We focused on Flaherty and Collins, as you mentioned, the Indianapolis developer that's done projects nationwide. And then negotiations really set in to a point where we actually, Joe, walked away from the table and thought, this is just not going to happen. At the beginning of the year, I spoke to the Rotary. Bob Salzberg at the HT had asked me to speak. And I said at that time, I forget, January or February of this year, this will either spectacularly fail or we'll get something done this year. And the part that I was concerned about was if we had to walk away from the table, that's a lot of years of preparation. But we got to a point where we decided we had to walk away from it unless Flirting Collins changed its proposal, which it did pretty dramatically. So now we have a proposal in place that all we're doing is entering into a letter of intent. It's not a legally binding commitment on either the city government or the developer's part that now will go to the Redevelopment Commission, citizen panel, and they'll begin hearings on it. So there'll be many more opportunities for the public to discuss this and formalize this agreement or not, and the land will be transferred eventually. Now, others still could come in. Other competing interests could come in. We don't believe that's likely, given the fact that they had all the time in the world to propose an RFP. The other competitors, the other three that submitted, were nowhere near the scale of this development. And so we don't see it likely. And I think in large part, it's because we decided we wanted this land developed with a vision of the community in mind, not just a vision of the bottom line. This was not just about what would produce the highest level of income. This is publicly owned land that will be conveyed back to the private sector, but we didn't want it to be done in just any way. We wanted it done in the way that will enhance the expansion of downtown.
When you walked away from the table, what changed to come back to actually move forward with that letter of intent?
Yeah, the biggest, three of the biggest things. One was a real commitment to the tech sector, and as part of this proposal, Envisage, a local, very successful tech firm that is located downtown in leased space, will actually have a headquarters built for it in the Certified Tech Park. And that is, to me, the most exciting part of this entire proposal. It will allow them to be anchored in Bloomington. They have been sought after elsewhere, including the state of Illinois, where they do have some interest now. And we know that people were reaching out to them, hoping to lure them there. So to have that anchor is important, and to retain them. But also it will allow them room to expand and not just move into space that they fill, but will have room to be filled for years to come. Other tech offices that will be built, about 40,000 square feet of commercial technology office space, then retail space. The other big difference, though, probably the main difference, is I was not interested in having the taxpayers own a parking facility, another parking garage. For those who followed city government in recent years, you know that it is financially challenging, as a euphemism. And I just did not want to get us digging a hole even deeper financially when it came to garage ownership. And in their initial proposal, they wanted the government to own that parking facility. So now we've negotiated to a point where F&C will build, own, maintain that parking facility. They'll also be putting in additional parking that serves beyond just their tenants, both their residential and commercial tenants. They will build excess parking capacity for other users of the tech park that aren't their particular tenants. So that was a big difference as well. Same is true with green space. The commitment to green space is there. I think somewhat understandably they wanted the government to own that, and that would have been okay. But if we do that, we have to maintain it, and there are long-term costs. And my vision of this has always been to take this publicly owned land, well, it was university owned, city owned, and then to convey it back to the private sector in its totality. And so that was a big part of that last part of the negotiation, was to say, we want the entirety of the land you're going to take to be privately owned and maintained. And right now, that's where we all are.
The other thing I thought was interesting was the name change. Now it's called the Trades District. And before it was more or less called a certified tech park.
Yeah.
Is that a big difference in the goals of what that area is going to be?
Well, yeah, I suppose. I'm not sure I'd say the goals of it, because the goals remain the same. But in the marketing of it, the branding of it, there is still, and this, you know, you start to kind of get into the weeds on the description, but there is a legally defined area known as a certified technology park. And that certification comes from the state of Indiana. I believe we were the last one in the state of Indiana to receive it. Through the Daniels administration, and I don't believe there have been any, I may be wrong, it may have been one more, but I don't think there were any more added after ours. So that technology park designation is a legal one. It's not the best in terms of branding. It also, for me, has never told the full story. If you go back to interviews, gosh, 8 years ago and probably longer, I've talked about not only a tech park, but all that 12 acres. That's why I was interested in it, for diversifying our downtown residential. We've got that, what I think is fair to characterize as a glut of student housing, and you and I have talked about this issue many times. And I would like in that 12 acres to see a diversification of the demographic and the type of housing. So in the 5.96 acres that FNC would be taking of the total 12, they would be aiming for young professional workforce housing that serves that tech park area. And then we also have other acreage that will be a component of affordability for seniors, true workforce affordability. And that is not part of this 5.96 acres. So there's still room to improve the area. But a lot of citizens in the panels, the visioning, looked at it and really wanted this to be marketed more and that's where the trades district came up. Given the trades that had the heritage of this area, in fact, an IU-related group looked at this, helped us do the marketing of it, and kind of harkens back to the turn of the last century, when we had the furniture factory, other trades that were serving this very part of downtown.
You touched upon my next question about the apartments. From what I read, 200,000 square feet of apartments and then 15,000 square feet of office space. And of course, you mentioned about the fact that you don't want that to all be student housing.
Right.
But how is that accomplished?
Sure. Yeah, I want to clarify, it's not just 15,000, it's 15,000 of the tech. There's another 35,000, 25,000, excuse me, of the retail, commercial space, office space, and that that office space is an issue in the downtown. And so in terms of the apartments, we're looking for housing that will be year-round residents, people who we hope would live and work within the downtown area, preferably within this trades district, but perhaps other parts of downtown, looking at empty nesters and others who might be interested in living downtown, but not living in a student apartment complex. So what FNC has agreed to is that we will put legal restrictions on the use of that property so that it cannot be rented out as student housing. And it really is that simple, is that they have agreed to that, that's their commitment. We take them at their word, but they understand that we want to see that in writing, and that will happen. The other parts of the things that they committed to that were different than initially is they have committed to paying 10 years worth of property taxes at $500,000 per year minimum, so a guarantee of $5 million. All of us believe, from the time the project is completed, and up till then, once the transfer of property occurs, they'll start paying property tax on whatever that value of that land is undeveloped immediately. So that has been non-taxable property for generations. And now that will be an income producing for the community to have that property tax revenue. But they've guaranteed that $500,000 per year. Both they and we believe it will be significantly more than that, probably closer to $750,000 per year, but it's a 10-year guarantee so that the community is insured at receiving that. And then, of course, beyond that, will continue to be a stream of revenue to the community. In addition, right now, as we maintain it, it's about $100,000 a year of maintenance cost on that property. So we'll shed that, and FNC will pick up that expense as well. So there's a lot of components that are part of this, but that housing will be non-student, will be taxable property, will be revenue producing for the taxpaying public.
And then just to kind of wrap this up now, as we look forward, and let's say this does, I mean, there's still a lot of steps to go through before this is a contract and signed and so forth. Then, but again, you can't help but keep looking to the future and want to visualize what this is going to look like. We talked about the student housing. Does the same kind of process happen then for that tech type business as well? And so that all the storefronts aren't restaurants and and so forth.
Sure, there are, and part of it is the guarantee that Envisage will be, their headquarters will be there. So, I mean, in that case, we know for a fact who the tenant will be. We also know Rough Cut Ventures, which is, again, another locally owned company that is going to be locating there. So their headquarters will be there. And then they, at the last RDC meeting, talked about how they've already had businesses. And again, we're talking about small startup tech firms that want to locate there, co-work space. I don't know who those businesses are that they're talking about, but we know of at least two businesses now that are going to locate there, and we know what that will look like. In terms of, there will be other office and commercial, we want to encourage first floor retail. Obviously, we know we're not, my goal has certainly not been in downtown to have more chain restaurant in the downtown area. But as I said, when I was unsuccessfully trying to get that passed by the council, I was talking about Kirkwood, the square, and 4th Street. I wasn't talking about the entirety of downtown. So I don't know yet what will happen here or what people will want to happen in this area. I don't think it's the same, certainly not in my mind, the same in terms of the need to protect the uniqueness of it as it was at Kirkwood, the square, and 4th Street, but it would be my strong preference that we look for locally owned restaurants, locally owned retail. Certainly it will be local firms in terms of the commercial office space.
Moving on to last week's City Council meeting, I was reading where $15,000 was going to help fund what was formerly called Martha's House, which is the emergency homeless shelter. And it sounds like enough funding sources are starting to come together to have it operate through December. How important is that to you for that shelter to remain in place?
Yeah, I don't think it's an exaggeration to say critical for it to. You know, Dan Combs, Perry Township trustee, is relatively an unsung hero. I mean, he's been one of the longest serving office holders in this community. And people don't understand what he does, and his wife Pat as well, to support that township. He has been, it's an exaggeration, I know, to say tip of the spear, a little bit dramatic, but that's what he's been. He has been at the forefront of this, and I don't think Martha's House, without its board members over the years, without its staff, and without Dan Combs and Pat, it would have closed before. And it has been a rough ride, extremely rough ride. And they've been so focused on trying to keep the doors open that they haven't really focused as much on raising money as other social service agencies do. That meant they couldn't qualify for United Way funding. And then, of course, fell upon hard times to the point where they couldn't qualify for Hopkins loans, the tax issues come up. So it is, I think everyone agrees, an entity in need of a revamp. But the bridge funding was very important. And so the city council members came to me early on and said that they wanted to commit dollars to get us through. And Susan Sandberg in particular, Daryl Nair, working with Tim Mayer, working with Dan Combs, pointed out that if we could get bridge funding invested by not just the city government, but the county and township, that we could all partner and get this through the end of the year. The big question mark is, then what? And you know, there is another agency from out of town that has been looking at entering into the Bloomington area to serve the same population in a bit different way. But if that were to work, I think we'd be in good shape. If it doesn't, we'll either have to create a new entity or form a partnership that at least temporarily serves the need. But to get through to the end of this year, remembering, of course, that through the end of the year are the winter months when demand is the highest, it is a huge success for this city council.
And every now and then you hear about an ordinance throughout the country limiting plastic bags in the mm-hmm. news. And recently I've just read about something about that being discussed here. What are your thoughts? And is that something that Bloomington could enforce?
Well, I don't know. I don't know that it's going to come up during my term or not. So I have not studied it. I've certainly read about it over the years, not simply when this first came up. In California, there are some of these in place. The good environmentalist, and I mean that very sincerely, the liberal in me is saying we need to do this. We need to be a leader. There have been people who looked at Bloomington years ago and said, oh, your smoking ordinance is crazy. And now it's commonplace around the state. People looked at what the city was doing with domestic partner benefits. Well, that's just a little bit out there. Now you see others, it's the issue in the state legislature about how we're going to, if we're going to be an equitable society or not through our government. So Bloomington was at the forefront of that. And I keep thinking, maybe that's what this is. Maybe this is the beginning. On the other hand, you've got big retailers, grocers, who are concerned about it, who are trying to do it through a voluntary basis. You've got the enforcement issues. You've got the exceptions. And you've got the fact that surrounding communities aren't doing it anytime soon. And how much of a difference is it making? And is it worth the downsides? And that's what the city council will have to weigh, are those options. So I do have mixed emotions. I have to admit, though, I was at the lead when I was in the state legislature of a lot of environmental issues that people pointed to and said, these are out there and we shouldn't be doing this because other states aren't doing it. We'll put ourselves in a competitive disadvantage. And yet I think they were the right thing to do. So, today, not having studied it thoroughly, I lean for it and would want to learn more about all the ramifications. What other options there might be? Are there other options that could provide enough incentives to not use plastic bags short of what is essentially a tax? And I will say, again, this is kind of the managerial part of this. If you do institute a fee, somebody has to manage that. That means there are costs involved. Will it pay for itself? Is it the ministerial function someone has to perform, and who's going to collect all that revenue? It's a lot of question marks. Not to say there aren't answers, just right now I don't know what those are.
Two quick questions from listeners. This is from Stephen, works at IU. He says it's been a while since he's heard anything about the expansion of the convention center. Mm-hmm. Any progress behind the scenes, or is the project indefinitely on hold or dead?
I'm a politician, so I'll say indefinitely on hold. That way you have wiggle room. And I'm serious. I think it is indefinitely on hold. The county parking garage needed to happen for it to be on indefinite hold as opposed to dead. Because if you didn't move the county employees, off of the parking that's out there, you wouldn't be able to have room to do that expansion. So with the county parking garage happening now in the downtown area and those parkers being able to move into the downtown, it keeps it on life support. You still have the political issue, though, of the food and beverage tax, which hasn't been settled, and I'm not sure what would change that to make it an easier thing at the county level. Now, you could go back and create a city food and beverage, and then the city council would be the one voting on it, overseeing it, and that might be a bit easier to do since the convention center is essentially serving the downtown. And hoteliers, that world has changed some. We've got two, three new hotels since this discussion first started. That could impact the market and what hoteliers are willing to do in that area, so we'd have to revisit that issue. So the delay that occurred when the food and beverage tax was not passed certainly put it on hold, and it's always easy to say indefinite because that doesn't mean anything, and we don't know what the very definition of it. I don't think it's dead. I do think that long term we have, as a community, decide what we want our downtown to be. I do think we should all take a look at what other communities are doing, and they are aggressively doing things that are attracting people into their communities, into their downtowns in particular. And you look at Kokomo and Evansville, Fishers. We have to remember not to have blinders on as we look at the future of this community.
Bill posted on a Facebook post, he's going to keep our Switchyard Park talk going this month. Yeah. He is wondering if there's any way that the park can have a train and merry-go-round to make it a destination for tourists, and the train would be electric so it wouldn't pollute.
I've got to tell you, I've not heard, especially the merry-go-round part, but we have heard so much input and interest in it. I will say the train part in particular has an appeal to me because, as you and I've talked about before, I'd like to see some recognition of the heritage of what rail in particular and all these other industries. We talk about a trades district, all the trades that serve this community built it to what it is now. I think would be a nice way to recognize it, and I especially like the fact that in terms of electric, and the electric component certainly has an appeal too, so that we aren't all coughing in the congestion of I hope hay fever and smoke. But there's certainly an appeal. to having a rail component to the Switchyard Park and an electric train would be a kind of a nice double message of the environmental commitment this community has, as well as the rail heritage.
And I bet you're getting all kind of comments from people who have ideas for Switchyard Park, and they can still make those,
they
right?
They can, and if you go to the city website, bloomington.in.gov/switchyard, the same is true of the hospital. We have people who have a lot of ideas and things that I've never heard of suggested before, and so you can go to bloomington.in.gov/hospital, and there you can see meeting schedules, minutes, documents that relate to that issue, but you can also submit. And we'll be having two public comment sessions for people. One will be in this building, one will be, I believe, at the convention center, one will be at the hospital itself in the auditorium there. They're still scheduling the dates and times, but if you look at that website, you'll see the dates and times. And you can either submit electronically, you can show up and watch, you can show up and actually testify as to what you'd like to see happen in the hospital.
What else am I missing?
The Cubs are headed for the playoffs.
I had that down here. College football has started, and we're still keeping up with the Cubs. When's the last time that happened?
It's September, and we're still talking Cubs. For a fan, it's unheard of.
Thank you
very
much.
Thanks very much, Joe.